Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burleskpodden och vår samarbetspartner Passion of Sweden sponsrar i år Oktoberfest med fina priser ur Passion of Swedens unika sortiment av sexleksaker och underkläder till vinnarna i tävlingen Tassel Twirl. Tävlingen är en del av Stockholm Burlesque Festival 2017. Är du nyfiken på vilka priserna kan vara och är du sugen på att botanisera bland ett stort utbud av sexleksaker och underkläder går du in på passionofsweden.se.
Kära lyssnare, kollegor, älskare och vänner, välkomna till Burlesque-podden. Vi sitter på Custom Music Productions, jag heter Aurora Brännström och det är Andreas Hedberg som står för ljud och redigering, precis som vanligt. Today, I have a guest here who's gonna make me try to speak English. I'll do my best. It's the Jean-Paul Bichard, who is an artist, photographer and a burlesque producer. Warm welcome.
Thank you.
Hi. So glad to have you here. Mm-hmm. You actually do a lot of things and you have a great experience from the burlesque world, mm-hmm. both in Sweden but also abroad from a lot of countries. Would you like to tell me and the listeners a little about you and what you do for
yeah.
a living?
If we start with the burlesque, which yeah. is where I met Frauke 8 years ago, my wife, Fauna Frauke, my wife.
Yes.
And essentially we work together under the kind of Bichard Studios brand. So we're running the Stockholm Burlesque Festival and Fauna Frauke Presents and more kind of diffusion events as well. But part of what we do is to, you know, visit Europe and the States, and I'll photograph at an event and yeah. And she'll perform. So we kind of try to mix things in so that we're always like busy and mm-hmm. always kind of got something crazy going on.
Yeah.
But it's really like fundamentally it's trying to kind of build a network. Is trying to connect to people from as wide a field as possible. Mm-hmm. And not only for our kind of festival and club, but also because we really believe in the blessing.
Yeah.
So.
And you are a great team, I think.
Yeah.
Have a good teamwork with her performing and you photographing.
Yeah.
And as you said, you can go abroad and do a lot of creative things together and to connect with other artists and producers, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so we build up a network. It's a kind of trust network. Because one of the interesting things about burlesque is it's, in a way, I think of it more as a kind of group of scenes rather than one whole community.
Yeah.
And those scenes are, you know, they vary very much in terms of, say, professionalism and, like, ambition and aesthetics as well. So if you look around Europe, for instance, you've got Berlin is a fairly big scene. But it's a little bit more kind of more freak showy and that, mm-hmm. you know, more kind of carnival. You then got like London, which is very well established, but is a lot of kind of venues that have been around for a while. Mm. So it's, you know, it's one of the kind of like maybe the burlesque powerhouses, but it's actually smaller groups within it. And I think one of the most, in a way, one of the most innovative scenes at the moment is the Paris-Brussels kind of scene.
Okay.
Where you've got these kind of, a lot of new, younger kind of performers who are extremely talented and work, collaborate very closely together. So we got a kind of, you know, and of course Stockholm, it's now what, I think 12, 15 years that the Bella scene has been here, you know, first with Hoochie Coochie, and then we kind of, in a way, took over. And smaller brands that have kind of come and gone and worked their way through it. You know, and of course, then you got Helsinki, which was one of the best burlesque festivals in the world, and they've now stopped, but there's still a very vibrant kind of scene, you know, the Finnish scene. So Europe's a really, like, exciting kind of powerhouse and very, very varied. And in a way, it kind of, I guess, reflects a little bit the American scene is a very big and very diverse scene. Obviously, more there. New York's the kind of powerhouse, but Las Vegas is where everybody comes once a year to kind of to crown people and be generally. Yes.
What's like, that called? The
Burlesque Hall of Fame.
Burlesque Hall of Fame.
The lovely part of that is it's more the fundamental part of that is it's a celebration of older burlesque performers.
Yeah, right.
So you have literally, I think last year there were people from, I think, 5 or 6 decades of burlesque and stripping. And it's lovely to see how historically it's gone from what they're calling like quite elegant striptease through to the kind of era of like really like full-on striptease. And then striptease itself kind of got taken over by porn, and then the kind of resurgence of neo-burlesque and the new like burlesque movement. So it's lovely to see these kind of older burlesque performers really being celebrated and given space. And something I felt when I first heard about it, I thought like, well, you know, it was a bit sceptical. I mean, you kind of get an 80-year-old person stripping on stage. And of course, you know, I think about my grandmother or, you know, but, you know, but when you go there, you realise and what the absolutely beautiful thing of it, and I was bawling my eyes out, is you realise that there's a person with fire and with passion, and it doesn't matter what the shell, what the body is, because the body ages, but the passion inside remains. And when you see someone coming out and they've maybe got a hip replacement and they're kind of walking out slowly, but there's a fire in their eyes and there's a beautiful, graceful movement and this kind of great costume that they've kind of, you know, been wearing for, you know, 30, 40 years ago. It's very emotional and very beautiful.
Yeah.
Här kommer en hälsning från en av våra samarbetspartners. På Chambers of Love kan du testa ut din korsettstorlek och välja antingen en av deras cirka 45 modeller eller skapa din helt egna custom-made korsett. Chambers of Love har något som passar alla, oavsett smak eller storlek. Utöver det har de Skandinaviens mest välsorterade BDSM-utbud över disk och även ett stort utbud av sexleksaker. Chambers of Love har väl utvalt sortiment och välutbildad personal. Titta gärna in på Drottninggatan 71D i Stockholm eller Trädgårdsgatan 3 i Norrköping och hitta just det du behöver. Jag har själv en korsett från deras sortiment och jag älskar den. Chambers of Love finns även dygnet runt på www.chambersoflove.se.
You, with your unique eye for all of this and your experience, what is burlesque for you? What is the magic about it? What is it?
I think it's a number of things. I think one of the most fundamental and important things, I think, is that it's a feminist space. It's a space where women, and one of the few places I think in society where women can decide how to define their own sexuality and how to, in a way, kind of perform that or express that. So one thing I thought initially was that, you know, it's about non-objectifying women, but it's not. It's about women choosing whether or not to objectify themselves and how they do that.
Yes.
And I think that's so fundamentally different from society wanting to kind of own and label and kind of stamp what women are and what their sexuality is. So that for me is a really important, it's one of the big motivators I think that I have. And I call myself a feminist, but I'm a very, like a back, I would never wear a t-shirt saying this is a feminist. I think it's I get a little bit suspicious when guys do that because it just feels like, you know, I'd prefer to do stuff through my actions and support through my actions. So the last 8 years since meeting Frauke and working with her and developing our brand has been very much about taking a more of a back role to a woman. mm-hmm. you know, which I think is, if more men did that, then we'd have a kind of better society, you know.
Yeah.
I think the aesthetics I love. I mean, when you've got people who are kind of crazy, they are nuts. Burlesque performers, really good burlesque performers are nuts.
Yeah.
And they'll spend all their time, you know, developing new ideas and costumes and narratives, and whether it's feathers or other kind of crazy props and things. Mm. What I love about that is, as a photographer, is I can approach someone and find a venue or a location that I think will work. And then we just kind of collide the two, you know, this really crazy alter ego and a wild location, and we get some kind of magic happening.
Mm.
And it's a series I've been doing for several years called Exquisite Identities, which is about essentially literally that.
You know, identities that was exactly that are exquisite. What I was thinking about.
Yeah. And there have been some crazy shoots, like one of the big stars internationally, Lada Red Star. She's an amazing performer from former Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And she has these crazy costumes, like it has a dove built into this huge headdress and beautiful, almost like Dior, like vintage, you know, kind of haute couture, like, you know, corset. And underneath these beautiful blood red like crystals, because the whole piece is about the Yugoslavian conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And about, so you got this beautiful, like gorgeous, sumptuous dress, but it's about a really serious, you know, crisis in her history. When her family were kind of displaced, and people, a lot of people she knew were killed. And you know, so in Europe, in our time, you had a really harsh civil war. And I love this thing that in burlesque, you can, you know, you can collide very serious social issues with a beautiful, frivolous, you know, bubbly kind of, you know. So it's a nice tension. But we decided we'd shoot just north of Berlin in an old asylum. From the kind of, I think, the Victorian time, but then also from the Cold War era. And we kind of get there, and there's all these signs saying that there's guards and dogs and there's barbed wire around it. And we were a little bit like, we weren't really expecting that. And then you kind of think, well, now that's bullshit. So we kind of climb over and throw all the you know, the equipment and the lights and stuff over. And sure enough, it was like winter, so it's really cold. There's a light dusting of snow, and there's dog prints and footprints. So there are guards patrolling it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we're thinking, like, okay, so we kind of go in, you know, we're tiptoeing around this old broken down asylum. And and every time you hear a noise, we're just completely silent, you know. And the wind's whistling through, and it's like, it's -2, but it feels like -5, you know. And then she puts on this beautiful costume. And that was amazing, because when you look at the pictures, it's like, it was a beautiful day of like 20 degrees, and she's there taking her time. And the reality was, it was like stressful. we were trying to hide from the guards. It was cold as hell, so she had to put a sleeping bag on, and then like, and this is what I love. Yeah. There's a kind of adventure in burlesque, and there's a sense of, I think the really good burlesque performers are, you just feel like they'll go for anything. They'll dive off the edge of something and fly. And they'll keep flying, and they'll keep trying to find something which is quite special. And that I really, really enjoy, like, working with, you know.
So you like burlesque because it's crazy and adventurous, and also because we can play with politics and feminism.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you, as a photographer, when did you find burlesque? Well, has it been something part of your work all the time?
No. In fact, if I give a very, very brief or very quick history, you know, I graduated from St. Martin's Art School in London in 1991, which was in Soho, which was an amazing melting pot of ideas. I then started up an artist book publishing company and used to make artist books and sculptures and was quite successful. I sold works to the Museum of Modern Art in New York and Victoria and Albert Museum and the Tate Gallery and Melbourne National Library or whatever. So I was kind of doing very well, but I got to the point when it wasn't enough for me. And the institution kind of owned my work, and I didn't really believe in the institution, the art institution. So then I started doing, for several years up until about 2004, I was doing installation work, and that was based around forensics and video games and kind of male violence. So I was actually trying to explore what male violence was, because I've always been terrified of it. And so there was a kind of, and that was, you know, like shows in Lisbon, in Portugal, in Spain, and in the States. And I typically turn up 3 days beforehand, you know, to do the show I'd been commissioned to do that I'd been working on for 6 months, and then throw everything away and start from scratch.
Okay.
So in 3 days, I'd kind of make a new show. And I loved that spontaneity. Mm-hmm. And it was like kind of performance. And I did perform once, but I'm not such a performer.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, it's about trying to find a really beautiful kind of space, which is like you're kind of floating or you're flying.
Mm.
And you're not really aware of anything else apart from, you know, maybe 5 o'clock Saturday, I'm going to land a 747 on an aircraft carrier and it's going to happen. You know, so you set yourself a very big ambition and you have the faith in yourself that you're going to achieve it. And you just literally, that's it. Everything is focused on that. And there's a beauty in that, you know, which I actually now see in performance where someone can prepare for months or years and then they'll go out on that stage and within 4 minutes they've had to deliver this amazing kind of thing, you know. And then 8 years ago, I went to a burlesque club, which I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go along. And a little, you know, like underground club in South Sweden, South Stockholm, and saw this cool woman, Forlan Frauke, performing. And
so that's where you opened your eyes at burlesque.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'd been to Hoochie Coochie a couple of times beforehand.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But what the difference was, Hoochie Coochie was really cool in Shagalbanen and very neo-burlesque. But it was more like, not mainstream, but it was more of a club.
Mm.
And you go when I went down to, like, it was called Pluto.
Yes.
And it was this little dark, you know, felt a little bit like, a bit kind of like 1930, you know, 30s Berlin, and people were smoking and it was all really rough. And then the performers came on and I was just like, this is wild. I mean, this is not anything I'd seen in Stockholm before. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of hooked up to do a shoot, and that was really nice. But it was just very much like, yeah, that's cool. We did a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Hoochie Coochie again and one night, and this woman, Forna Frauke, came up afterwards with her friends, and she's like, I hear you have lots of good, cool parties. We'll have an after party at yours. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And the funny thing was that was it. We just kind of met and collided, mm-hmm. and we never stopped since. So I started going along, you know, the first few clubs, I was just going along and doing a little bit of photography but then it, you know, and helping out. And then we just realized that it was kind of two heads are better than one.
Mm.
And when 6 years ago we moved into the big Nalen, and that was scary. I mean, going from like 200 people to like 700 or 600. I think the first show was 450, but you know, it's a big financial risk.
Yeah.
And all of everything we do is our own funding. I mean, we don't get any external funding, but, you know, so from that point onwards, then we really were like kind of flying and, you know, building a kind of a very substantial international brand.
Mm. Where do you get your courage from to do this thing?
It's a psychological thing, I think. I need, for one thing, if I was born now and I was a kid, I'd be seriously medicated for ADHD or something, because I just I get bored all the time.
Uh-huh.
I love doing stuff.
I see.
I love just kind of, and if I'm not, I'd play video games.
All right.
So I'll play 4 or 5 hours of video games in the evening because
you
I
do?
Just keep on. Yeah.
Okay.
Like on all the time.
Mm.
I also love risk. I just want, you know, it can be crushing, but it's like, I love that feeling of you're kind of right on the edge all the time and you might fall off, but you don't.
Mm.
And that feeling when you don't is kind of good.
Okay.
You know, so that's kind of two simple things, you know.
I guess it's good. I mean, you've come a long way since that Pluto club.
Yeah.
Where you met.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Big Nalen and Fräulein Frauke Presents is to say the biggest burlesque club in Sweden, and you made
probably
a
in Europe, yeah.
Probably in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's amazing. Would you say that you and Frauke are kind of the same as a personality? Like, does she also have that drive to take risks, or do you?
She has a very, very, very strong drive. I think it's a little different, which is what's good, because we have similarities and differences. I think that the differences are is that I'm a bit more like all over the place.
Okay.
And she really is like, she nails down.
Okay, focused.
You know,
So
we both make decisions on, you know, the creative decisions. Mm. With she takes a bit more responsibility on that because, of course, she's the overall kind of creative director.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of design decisions. We both talk about, you know, curating the shows and what, who we should have on. And but she does have that really deep embedded experience in that. And I have the more kind of, you know, visual, like, you know, photography and, you know. So it's a really nice combination. And in terms of personality, I mean, she really does get it done. You know, on the night she's like, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, I've noticed.
And, I'm much more, I'm really good at problem solving. And, you know, if something's gone wrong, then I just, I'm very calm and I just go in and I work it out. And but also I'm quite kind of hard on people if they...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know, if someone's kind of not really doing what we need them to be, I'll be quite kind of harsh with them, because I just feel it's like, you know, we have one hit at every time we do something, and it's got to be good. And this is like whether we do a big project or a small project, it represents us. So it's got to be the best we can possibly do. And if we're working with other people, then they are expected to do the best they possibly can, you know, which I think is reasonable. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So you and Frauke, you, how do you say it? Kompletterar
each complement other.
Complement each other.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And we do. And at times, of course, we drive each other crazy, and, you know, because it's two quite big egos that kind of rattle around. And we spend all our time together working. You know, we work from home. We did have a studio in town, but it was kind of worthless. So not worthless, but it didn't work. And so, yeah, we spend
pretty much 24/7. At your home.
Yeah. It's like, and she'll be making costumes in, we've got one room which is the kind of studio, and another one which is the boudoir. So, and she'll be making her costumes and doing like, you know, admin or whatever. And I'll be doing design work when we've got a project coming up. And then I'll be doing my photography and loads of editing and video editing and stuff. So.
I feel connected to you in this, because me and my husband, we also have our cooperation, and we're married and we have a kid, and and our home is where we rehearse, and where I sit with the computer and do everything, and then we eat and then we sleep.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so efficient. This is the thing that I realize. See, this is the thing, I don't like inefficiency. So for me, and I know a lot of people will argue that, you know, sitting on a train for an hour is a good thing because it's a pause, and but I get so, I just feel like that's 2 hours of my day I could be doing something, like either working or playing a video game. It's like that's like terrible for me. It's like,
I see. But you can play video games at the train?
No. I like the really serious one. I got I got a big video editing computer.
Oh, I see.
And gaming.
Well, but I can relate to that as
the
well.
Two
I
go mean, hand in yeah. Hand.
I've got my movies, and but I cannot really watch a movie without writing at the same time. Multitasking.
Yeah.
Okay, but and you like it that way?
Yes, I've worked as an. I mean, the last real job before I was went to St. Martin's, I did a number of kind of real jobs,
But what is a real job?
Well, you know, a job with a boss, and usually it's a guy, and I have really big issues with authority and men. And so the last literal job was a summer job when I was at art school, and I worked in a wood yard because I thought I'd learn how to make beautiful wood things. And it wasn't. It was huge logs coming in and very industrial. And and he was the foreman was a real asshole.
Oh, okay. I mean,
sorry, but it's, and he kind of got me to do all this kind of really, really bad, like rubbish jobs. And in the end, I just got really fed up. And one day I got a big bucket of the bleach and covered the whole of the... I was meant to clean the toilet. And I mopped the ceiling and the mirrors. And so it's all covered in this dirty bleach, everything.
Okay.
Completely. It stunk and it looked like grey stuff dripping all down the walls. And he walked in and I thought he was going to kill me. And he's like, I won't say what he said to me, but it was very, very, you know, harsh. Yeah. And I just turned around to him really calmly. I just said, I'm never, ever going to work for anybody again.
Wow.
And just stare, and then he just kind of stared at me, and he was like, yeah, you will. And I just thought, no, I will never, ever. All I will do is I will work with people on a level.
Mm-hmm.
I want equality. I don't want to look up to someone or down to them.
Yeah.
And I keep that whether, you know, whatever gender, whatever race, religion, whatever you are, you know, whoever the other person is, I want to work with them as a collaborator rather than this kind of hierarchy or... I think it's bullshit, to be honest. But
yeah.
And I have.
I can just
I haven't
agree.
Worked for anybody since. Oh. Like, I work with people and they've paid me a lot of money, but it's like, but I work with them, not for them.
Yeah. So,
and I made that very clear when I start working with somebody.
I'm impressed. In yeah, that's very strong and very, I think, wise to dare to do. Have you always been... daring person?
I'd say now it's daring. It used to be stupid. I was really,
okay,
I was really
stupid.
Kind of idiotic. I used to take a lot of risks with myself, which were like absolutely ridiculous, like quite self-destructive, like from when I was a teen up through my 20s. I mean, I kind of almost kind of self-destructed a few times. And, you know, so I've managed to turn around. The way I always visualize things, I look at it being... I used to kind of jump off the diving board and not see if there's any water in the pool.
Okay, okay.
And usually there wasn't.
Oh.
And now at least I check to make sure there's water before I dive off,
yeah.
You know, which is kind of a little bit smarter, but still it's the same thrill. It's like, you know.
But you have turned this to be something, I think, good for you. I mean, you've come a long way with this quality.
And I will say that having had, you know, I have children and I have different, I've had... from other relationships, but the who are wonderful. I have two daughters who are, and they're inspiring because they're both now grown up. And my youngest daughter is doing like sports therapy, and my eldest daughter is writing for Dazed and Confused, you know, fashion magazine, and working in Selfridges as a copywriter.
Okay.
And she's a real feminist. And the first time I got an essay from her about feminism, I was just sitting there sobbing away, and I was going, I'm crying. And she's like, oh, Dad. It's like, but, you know, it's lovely because it is lovely having two daughters and trying to give them tools for how to negotiate life a little bit. Because I left them when they were young, so I was a real asshole. But that's another story. But I've kind of picked up more with their life as they got older. But what I was going to say, go on from that, is that really for me, I think one of the big things in my life was meeting Frauke. And we kind of give each other permission to be who we really needed to be. And I think that's one of the very, very like important things is that I think before that I'd spent time on my own and, you know, had kind of defined myself in a way, but was quite raw, even at the age of 45, you know what I mean?
Okay.
It took me that long to actually really find who I was. But then with her, I feel that, you know, we give each other this amazing permission to just be ourselves. And it's not always profound. It's not always like dramatic. But there's an underlying feeling that what we're doing is kind of wherever we're heading is right.
Yeah.
And you know, even if we're making a wrong move, it's like the wrong move is part of a bigger picture. And that's actually a very special thing. So.
Yeah. And you've now we have talked about you and Frauke.
Yeah.
And what you do in your apartment.
Yeah.
You have your studio, but you also travel.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little about your travel and all that you do abroad?
Yeah, I mean,
what is it?
Again, I'll have to cut lots of stories short, but there's kind of two lots of traveling. One is for burlesque, and the other has been photography.
Mm.
So for burlesque, we'll go to a lot of the festivals because Frauke performs at the festivals, mm. and I'll be commissioned to shoot them because I love live shooting.
Mm, mm.
Again, it's like if you take all that razzmatazz and smoke and colour and glitter and sparkling, and essentially you're standing there trying to capture it, mm-hmm. it's a real thrill.
Yeah, okay.
Because also I tend to use lenses that other photographers won't because
mm-hmm.
They're using these kind of long zooms and everything's yeah. to try to be make life easy, and I want a very particular thing.
Okay.
So I'll take fixed lenses and I'll be running around backwards and forwards because
mm.
If I want to zoom in, I have to run. You know, but what I get is I get a different kind of aesthetic to other people, which mm. I always try to find is that
mm.
what's in the cracks? You know, what's mm. what's something that other people are not doing,
mm.
and how can you explore that? And I think that's also why then the photographs come out a little bit differently, and I think people appreciate that. You know,
yeah.
But yeah, so we'll go to things like Vienna Burlesque Festival. We went to Helsinki. London Burlesque several years ago, although that's kind of changed in the way that is now. Oh, goodness.
New York.
It's loads. Yeah, New York Burlesque Festival, like Burlesque Hall of Fame, which I was really happy to shoot at.
Mm.
Vienna Burlesque Festival was great.
Okay.
We went a few years ago and went to the Life Ball as well, which
yes.
was the craziest party ever.
Yeah, I can imagine. I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a Gustav Klimt-inspired evening with, I don't know, you got Jean-Paul Gaultier fashion show going on. You got like nymphs running around, painted gold.
Mm-hmm.
People with Klimt body painting on them. You know, people with huge gold wings. It's like
mm.
loads and loads of performers on, and it was and it's all in the City Hall in Vienna,
yes.
which they open up for the night,
mm.
and a big pink carpet because it's an AIDS benefit, so it's mm-hmm. one of the longest and biggest AIDS benefits around.
Mm.
And so you actually walk down on the... I nearly got thrown off three times because
okay.
I got really carried away. You know, there's the thing, I can't stop. So I'm running up and down the pink carpet photographing people.
Yeah.
And I think it was Gloria Estefan was like with Sina King, who's a friend of ours. And they're like, photo opportunity. So I kind of grabbed them before they could reach the press. And then then I'm meant to be kind of behind the press thing, but I was like, I'm with the performers. It's like, and it's, you know, that's the thing. And a typical thing was, you know, everybody's there photographing mm. away from this beautiful building because
mm.
the lights are facing up the red carpet. And I just got the whole burlesque team and I said, I want you all to turn around.
Yeah.
So we have this beautiful building behind. Mm. And I got a few shots of really nice ones
yeah,
and they become defining shots.
Mm.
And that's the whole thing of like, in all the craziness and confusion, mm. you've got to just keep your eyes open and go like,
yeah.
Everybody else is photographing this way, we'll photograph that way.
Mm.
You know?
But
No,
so you can tell me yeah. if I'm wrong, but I don't think mm. so. But
yeah.
you are also a very social person. And maybe
kind of.
That's... Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I think so. And yeah. and you really look at people as
yeah.
well. I mean, not just with your camera, but with your eyes.
Yeah,
I'm so happy because you've also looked at me and we've become
yeah.
friends and all
yeah.
of that. And I think that's a bit of your character. And maybe mm. that is why also artists and performers rely on you
mm.
and feel comfortable with you in front of the camera because you also connect with them
mm.
more personally. So as you said now, I'm with the artist. Yeah, maybe you are. And
yeah.
from what I've seen on internet and Facebook, mm. you also get to be friends with
yeah,
the ones
yeah.
that you photograph.
Yeah, which yeah. is why I love the production side of it as
mm.
well, because, you know, we've had some of the best performers in the world staying in a flat, you know,
mm.
and they become friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of magic. It's like people like, actually one person, it's been like really quite special, or actually lots of them have been, but
mm.
People like Imogen Kelly was really lovely because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she is this big kind of, you know, superstar and everything,
mm.
but also she's a very, very strong woman. And she's got these fascinating stories.
Mm.
And not just about, you know, all the stuff she's done, but about her own vulnerability and herself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm.
really lovely when someone kind of starts talking about kind of who they are and what their fears are.
Yeah.
And that's a really, like, quite special.
Mm.
And, you know, Luminous Pariah we've had over, and Chris Harder, he's fantastic. He's just brilliant. I mean, he's going to be at the next festival. And he's one of those people that's like, I got so much admiration. I mean, he did have his own porn production company, but he's essentially a kind of a burlesque performer, a porn star, and a theatre like producer, actor as well. Mm-hmm. And all of the things he does with great passion and real kind of, you know, he's just Chris Harder, you know. Mm. He's a very special like person.
Yeah.
And that's what you can kind of define if you think of Tigger, or you think of like, we got Kit and Lou coming over. I mean, that's another good, great story. I mean, Lou Henry Hoover, the first ever drag king, like woman, you know, to win the Boylesque crown.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's that thing of like, it's people who want to keep questioning the borders and questioning the little fences and the boxes we're given and we're told to be in. They're like kind of going like, no way, we're going to break down these walls and we're going to do what we do, you know. Just quickly going back to the question is the other thing that I've been very lucky to do and also kind of was a bit of a pioneer with was like live action role play photography.
Yes.
Which is this kind of, you know, everybody thinks about geeks running around the woods with rubber swords, and which it was when people are teenagers. But those teenagers are in their 30s and they've got money to spend and still got that nerd obsession. So there's a group of people I know that were running these huge live action role play games in castles in Poland, in southern Poland. Mm. So one was a kind of Harry Potter style like game where you're literally in kind of, it's called College of Wizardry. You're in this castle for 3 days and it's teachers and pupils and they're learning, you know, magical creature lessons. And they literally go to the lessons for 40 minutes.
Mm.
And so you got all these people dressed in amazing costumes in a castle which was a kind of 19th century revisioned Gothic castle with magic, you know, or with not magic, but with, you know, bookcases you pull out, and you've got secret corridors going up and down the castle and a dungeon in the bottom. And it was just, you're just walking around.
So I'm
running around up and downstairs. Yeah, for 3 days, just thousands of shots and trying to capture everything. And then another one was Downton Abbey in a palace, just a little way away. Another big kind of quite grand palace with all these gardens. And so that was Downton Abbey inspired. And the really special one as well was a vampire-inspired one, which was kind of medieval vampires or 16th-century vampires. And that was just, the costumes there were just absolutely phenomenal.
Mm.
It was like coming off a film set.
Okay.
And in the daytime, because the play was at night, I could grab people and up in the top of this big kind of palace museum was there'd been a fire. Years ago, so it was all really broken down and like really rough, and it'd been repaired, but it was dusty, and so it was this feeling of these kind of old, decrepit, you know, like thousand-year-old vampires in this kind of wonderful. Ooh. And those things, they make my they make my life happy. It's like
sounds like it.
But what you're saying about connection, I think that one of the things I've always found really important about, I've only been photographing for about 8 years. But I've been obviously a painter, and you know, I had a visual aesthetic for a long time, 25 years. But one of the things I think for myself is really important about photography is that I try to drop, which I do as a producer as well, drop the ego, get rid of your ego. Don't be the filter in between the person and, you know, looking, and the subject, you know. And I think that way, then what I try to think of is, I think that whenever I'm working with somebody, I'm trying to make a space that they can be something in, whatever they want to be in.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'll direct them, or I'll work with the light, or I'll try to find, but I'm trying to work out how to get the most out of them rather than stamp whatever I want onto them. And I like that. That works for me, you know. So it's, in a way, it's like how to be more invisible in life and let other people connect or find it. And that goes with the production as well, you know. Because actually, I'm a very shy person.
Are you?
I'm very or very introspective person.
Hmm.
I can go out and I can, you know, be in a crowd and I can be like blah 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 and very happy, and but I actually like to be quite solitary quite a lot of time.
Okay.
So it's a kind of, it's a very, very like big contrast. There's no kind of in between for me.
Okay.
You know, so,
So sounds like to me that you also learn a lot from your photo shoots with these people.
I'm always learning from, you know, it's literally learning from people and from light. I worked it out, of course, you know, at some point when I was photographing that it's just about light. So if I walk into a room, I'm aware of where the light's coming from and what's hitting. And you can get the most brilliant photograph or the most the really cool photographs just from like things like a beer cabinet, you know, a beer fridge with lights in it becomes a softbox and can give a really beautiful light. So I've got some really gorgeous shots of people, portraits using a beer like cabinet in a bar.
Yeah.
And when you look at it afterwards, it could be in a studio, you know. Mm. And I love that thing of just trying to find stuff everywhere.
Yeah, it sounds like you have very, what can I say, curious eyes for surroundings. And as you said it yourself, that you're looking at the aesthetics and the lights.
Which I used to be overwhelmed by. I mean, this is why I did a lot of things like play video games. It, for me, it's a way of pushing off, because if you imagine walking along the road and everything's coming in, everything all the time.
Yeah.
And it just gets to be like, you know, you have to try to find somewhere to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really nice about photography is that I can kind of, I literally have a little window to look through. And I can close off a lot and I can just go like, that's what I'm looking at. And then you can be very, like, I can be very free.
Yeah.
You know.
You photograph mostly people.
Yeah.
Do you also photograph like nature or buildings?
A little, but it often feels a little bit forced, or not forced exactly, but it feels fine, but I don't feel as though that's what I'm really aiming for.
I see.
You know, I can wander out and I think like, oh my God, look at that landscape, and then I'll take a photograph. And I'm often disappointed when I get back because what I don't have, I think, which is what I believe, I look at a lot of landscape photography. I think you have to have another relationship with photography and with time to do landscape photography.
Time? What do you mean?
Yeah, because there's a kind of patience involved. You know, a landscape photographer will literally kind of get up at 5 o'clock every morning for... Because you see these beautiful shots where you go, how lucky is that? You're walking along and you go, what you realise is maybe for 3 weeks or 2 weeks they were kind of going back to the same spot at 5 o'clock in the morning and getting cold and getting a few shots. And then one morning the light is kind of perfect and then they spent all that time getting to know where the best spot is and what the kind of form is and the relationship of the
that's a different way to work.
It's a very methodical way, and I think it's beautiful. I mean, landscape photography is superb, you know, and I would love to have the patience, but I don't really have that kind of patience. You know,
but I saw that was a few years ago you had an you worked together with an artist.
Yes. Yeah.
And you, I didn't see this, and I'm so sorry about it.
No, that's cool.
But I saw it on Facebook later, and it was really interesting how you have mixed her art with your photography.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little about that? Because it was really interesting.
Yeah, I can. Her name's Eva Troy, and she's a really talented painter, originally from Bulgaria. And then living in Sweden and now living in England. But she went to a very traditional, like kind of communist art academy when she was quite young, and learnt very, very kind of traditional painting, like, you know, figure painting and figure drawing and landscape painting. And so she's got this kind of really strong and quite enduring vocabulary of how to paint. And what she decided at some point was that she'd start collaging, and because she likes kind of, She actually ran a club, and she likes the music industry, and so she kind of combined in a very eclectic way, you know, pop cultural icons and traditional painting. And then we just started talking, and she asked if I'd want to be interested in working with her, and I'm usually very skeptical about that, because, like I said earlier, I want someone else to have the same ambition, and the same, it's very hard to find people with a similar ambition.
Yeah.
But we just kind of talked a few times, you know, a little bit about it, and we both had a very strong idea of, we wanted to actually explore what the male gaze was, because the male gaze comes up all the time in, you know, art criticism and and I think it's what we worked out in the end was, I think it's a little bit misunderstood, but anyway, we'll come back to that. But so we just started working together, and the process was that I would photograph people that I knew in the nude. So, which was for me a first, because not really worked with actual nudes. Mm. I mean, of course, people were kind of, you know, in lingerie and...
Mm.
And it was really weird because the first time someone came in, I'm just like, what am I going to do? They haven't got a costume on. And it's like, oh, my God, you know. And it was kind of funny. It was a little bit like, just felt a bit like, oh, big blank space. And then you kind of go, but this is great because I love big blank spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to get people to kind of, to, it looked like, you know, like in a Renaissance painting, someone doing something.
Okay.
Like, so I'd get a few props, like a wooden pole and a big, you know, a bucket full of sand or whatever. So I get people to do, so they're lit beautifully and lit in a very kind of Renaissance way, which I like. But they were kind of doing something which could fit into a painting, but not a specific story. So I'd just do, I'd have in my mind something.
Okay.
And then I'd kind of get the person to be quite kind of bold in their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd just send them off to Eva and she'd kind of work on it. And then she'd send them back and we'd do a bit more, you know, backs and forwards with the collaging. Mm. But what I also found, which was really interesting, and this was something that I never thought about, was that it's to do with the difference between men and women when they're naked, is that when a man is naked, he's got a cock, and you can see it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of obvious. It's there, you know.
Yes.
When a woman, when women are kind of are naked, they're more, like, concealed. And if you do actually see their genitalia, then it's like often in things like pornography and it's about revelation.
Mm.
So the man, in a way, is about just being naturally like, I'm here and I'm standing out.
Yeah.
And the woman is like, well, I choose to reveal myself or not. And what I decided was that I'd have a very strong strategy of getting the women to be in poses which would be very revealing if it was from another position.
Mm-hmm.
So what then there's a kind of, in a way, there's a freedom. You don't have to be kind of covered all the time.
Mm.
But the viewer never actually gets to see the picture as a kind of, as either kind of, you know, the tropes or the ways that pornography is kind of, is formed and is consumed. So what I wanted, I wanted women to be powerful and to have like non-typical like poses, but I didn't want the viewer to have the power. I wanted the model to have the power. And that was actually, and then we started realizing that the male gaze, it's both men and women can have the male gaze. It's about ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's about an ownership of a woman in a very particular way.
Yeah.
And so we kind of, that was a really nice outcome of it. We don't work together at the moment because we also found that our working methods were slightly different. And we did some beautiful work together, but then it came to the point when we just decided that that was it. We'd done the kind of like the collaboration and... And I'm very, very fond memories of it because she's great and she's now very successful. I mean, she's doing like her kind of works in England and
stuff. But
States.
That question, like, what is the male gaze and what are you showing of your own body and so on, is actually connecting to one of the first things you said when you came here with burlesque and feminism and what it's all about.
Yeah.
So, this is really interesting to hear you talk about it. So, yeah, and the male gaze, that is interesting. What is it? Why do we talk about it all the time?
Because we live in a patriarchal society and men are real fucking egotists. It's like, I mean, to be simple, it is, I think, that, you know. And as a man, I mean, I am a guy and I get it. But I've also tried to kind of, you know, and I've been a real asshole in my life as well. And I understand that. And I've tried to work very, very strongly with that. Because, you know, it does take time. You have to, I think, at some point kind of reconcile yourself and say, okay, I've made really big mistakes and I've been, you know, like a jerk. And I have to try to own that and move on from it. And part of that is to unpick yourself. But in unpicking yourself as a man, you have to say, well, you know, what is a man in society? And we're given all these kind of permissions as a guy, you're given, but you're also given a lot of kind of roles or expectations that you don't necessarily want, but you feel as though you're kind of obliged to take them and to run with them. And then you wonder why everything goes to shit, because you didn't really actually have either responsibility or the desire to actually be that. And I think this is one of the things that makes masculinity quite toxic. Is that men themselves have a problem with being men, I think. I mean, it's very judgmental, but I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
I really believe that.
Probably.
And then, of course, women who get given all this kind of shit by men, they not only have to kind of, in a way, pick up themselves, but they have to work with men failing. So it's a kind of, and what I think is wonderful at the moment, and a lot of people are criticised in the way that burlesque has changed, but I think it's amazing. I think it's really powerful. Is now a lot of black women in the States, or women of colour, are taking ownership and really calling people out.
Mm.
And there's, you know, what that means is that white privilege, whether you're a man or woman with white privilege, is you have to be aware of that privilege.
Mm.
You know, that you get choices. You get also to choose whether or not you feel you've had enough.
Mm.
Oh, you know, I don't need to talk about this anymore. I think I've kind of talked about racism enough and I've talked about this enough. Yeah. You can, as a white person, you can drop it at the end of the day. You can go home and you're just a kind of a person.
Yeah.
If you're black and you've been all of your life going out and having to kind of wear other people's masks, perform for other people, you know, be victimized or be bullied, you know, be kind of terrorized, then you don't have a choice at the end of the day of just going like, oh, I'll just drop this now and I'll take a breather. And what I love is there's people like Sydney Devereaux and a woman called Meeks Baker in the States who are, they're quite radical feminists. And what they're saying is take responsibility for fuck's sake. You know, as a white person, take responsibility.
Yeah.
It's not up for some, and it's also men should do that as well, you know, in relation to women. Don't keep going back and asking a woman, or don't keep going back and asking a black person or person of colour, what do I do now?
Mm.
Look, learn, listen. Like, really, take space, but take a step back. Give someone some space. If you think of like 100 people in society doing something, and 90 of those are men, you can't fit another 10 people into that ring. You've got to get 10 people out before you put another 10 people in. And if men keep on saying like, yeah, we're feminists, we want more women in.
Put a T-shirt
on. And then they don't. They don't get a woman to be the co-director, or they don't kind of stand back and go, well, you be the creative director instead of me.
Mm.
They kind of go, we'll find you a place. And then it's usually like, you know, maybe a role that is more a kind of inadvertent commas, a woman's role, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
So if we really want to change society, and both for women, for people of colour, for people, you know, the queer nation, everybody has to start thinking more about taking personal responsibility and learning. So anyway, that's my soapbox.
Good preach.
but it's tough. Like I say, you know, it takes a long time to unpick yourself. And, you know, and it's also very, it can be extremely depressing when you start to realise all the prejudices and the kind of the stuff that you've been brought up with and the things that you've treated people, you know, like just expected people to be like something. And then you realise, actually, this is wrong.
Mm.
I shouldn't be thinking like this. And not that you should kind of really, you know, try to be someone else, but you can change fundamentally some of the things that are wrong in yourself.
You can if you look at it from a little from the outside. I mean, it's all over society.
Yeah.
This is something that we all have been brought up with.
Yeah, and it's always hidden. It's always kind of kept.
Yeah, it is.
Under the surface, yeah.
And as you said, the male gaze is always, is also from women's point of view. So it's not just the men, it's the women as well who has to look at it in this way from above.
Which is where I think burlesque comes in, because what I like also in burlesque is that often there are more women in the shows, and there is no space for the kind of the big group of white drunk guys. And rightly so, there should not be a space. Or, again, I'm talking for myself, and other people would probably say that's not right, but certainly, a lot of people who run clubs would, because they want money in from, you know, drink and whatever.
Mm.
But we've been very clear with our club. We worked very, very closely with Narlan, who are fantastic. I mean, our club wouldn't be the same if it wasn't working with Narlan.
Mm.
But we work with them in terms of they have very strong gender and anti-racist kind of policies, and they're part of groups that actually kind of promote this and try to work with this. The security guards are very, very cool. We talk to them about our aesthetic, and which the whole ethos of our club was, I used to go out clubbing a lot because I got divorced in Stockholm. And of course, when you get divorced, my friends were like, come on, we're going to go clubbing. and you realise you're sitting there at, you know, like 1 o'clock in the morning, really drunk and really, like, really sad, because you realise that it's kind of cattle market and you don't necessarily want to be involved in that. And it just, also the clubs are kind of quite aggressive, you know, it's all, get people in, cram them in as tight as possible, turn the music up as high as possible, get them sweating, get them chucking loads of alcohol down and then vomit on the way out. And it's and I found that very kind of nihilistic in a bad way, because I'm quite a nihilist, but in a good, I think in a good way. But, you know, and then you kind of realise that actually what, when we started working together with the club, what it is an opportunity to do is to build a kind of really positive way, a safe space, a space where people can be who they want to be and actually who they never really thought they would want to be. And there's something very beautiful, I think, when you've got this gorgeous place and you've got performers all around the world and you've got all these kind of maybe 700-800 Stockholmers who are all dressing up in crazy costumes. And but then you can turn around to the person next to you and just without any hesitation, you just be like, I think you look awesome. I love the dress or I love this. Or, and they can be black, white, straight, gay, whatever. It's like, it doesn't matter what they are, who they are, is that they're just another person who's celebrating with you and they're awesome.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of feel that you can kind of make these, in a way, it's another world. And that's what, actually, if we go back several questions, what Frauke and I completely like share is we do live in another world. We totally and utterly live in another world. And we kind of we kind of step out of it, and it's a little bit kind of worrying when you do, but you know.
Yeah, I know that your wedding was Rabbit Hole,
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. So maybe that says something about your relationship. Totally.
And I have a little ring that it's like, it says, remember Alice, because it's like, it was an Easter present from Felicia, from Frauke. And it's, if I described it, it's a beautiful kind of rabbit with two little rough diamond eyes, and I always wear it. My wedding ring is a skull.
That's a
it's
good
a memento mori. Yeah.
Before we stop this very interesting interview, would you like to tell us about the club you have already, but and the festival that comes up right in just a few weeks and few days actually?
Yes, it's very exciting in the Bichard household. It's like on the 13th and the 14th of October we have the Stockholm Burlesque Festival. We have performers from most of the continents. I think all continents. It's about, I don't know, 15 different countries, I think, that we've got people coming from. We have Kitten and Lou from the States as headliners, and Chris Harder, who are astonishing, and Joe Black, who's a really fantastic like compere. He'll be kind of taking everybody through, and he's kind of crazy. He's very kind of draggy, like a singer and a it's like Bette Davis meets a kind of drag queen, but in a really kind of crazy, fucked up way. But it's going to be two nights in Södertheatern on the Friday night, in the beautiful theatre there.
Yeah.
So it becomes this kind of almost like mini magical opera of burlesque. And then on Saturday night in our kind of second home, Nalen, which, you know, 1930s ballroom. And, it'll be pretty special. We'll have Oktoberfest, which is the World Tassel Twirling Championship.
Yeah.
Sounds very grand, but it's crazy and very funny.
I love it.
Yeah. And essentially for the listeners, it's a kind of, it's a competition in tassel twirling. But the tassels can be anywhere. They can be on the boobs or on the ass or elbows. Someone had one on their forehead. Someone had one on their cock. It's like, you know, it's kind of to the death, the last one standing tassling. And it's lovely because it puts a kind of a really nice spin on breasts. And October is a month when you're very aware of, breast cancer. And we have a raffle, and we always kind of donate money to the Pink Ribbon campaign. Or Rosa Bundet is a little bit different from the American Pink Ribbon thing, but which is, breast cancer research. And I love that, it's that thing of, like, it's seriousness and it's play. And you kind of mix them in. But also you just become aware of what I love about it is that it really breaks down these barriers that for a woman you have breasts, boobs, whatever you want to, however you define them, but they're there all the time. They're with you. It's like, it's not just this thing that for people to kind of stare at. And what Oktoberfest does is it just brings out this lovely connection to people as people who are kind of doing something crazy on stage. And it, in a way, what it does is it undermines some of the prejudices or our kind of ownership of a woman's body.
Yeah.
And it gives us another kind of perspective on it. And I think that's kind of cool. So that's what, so yeah, we have the festival for 2 days. And
and this is the seventh year?
It is, yeah.
It is.
We didn't, we weren't involved in the first year. And then there was a break. And then from the second festival, we were kind of co-producers and with the amazing Nika Kittens, who started it, and Hedwig, who's Duchess, who's one of the amazing people who started up the kind of scene in Stockholm. And then I think the third or fourth festival, we took it on ourselves, because I think what we realised was that it was more effective. And also, Duchess has got a lot of other, I mean, she's literally kind of, you know, she was running, trying to run a festival and had blogs and doing her own work and had, had a troupe. And it's that thing of, I think what we started to understand is we're just very good, we are good producers. And we saw the festival as something which we could build like internationally. And so we
we've
run with it. And now we have great people over and we got a good reputation for it. So
do you have any festival memory you'd like to share?
What, really special ones? Oh, that's really hard. The thing is, it's like it is like a whirlwind. It's like we start the week beforehand, we're preparing, and then literally you kind of you have a kind of countdown in a way from the night before, but on the morning it's kind of from 10 o'clock or it's maybe 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday through to the evening of Sunday. Because what we do is the performers, we have them round on Sunday morning for brunch. So we kind of, my sister-in-law, like Frauke's sister, comes at 3 o'clock in the morning and starts baking stuff on the Sunday morning. So we get people. And that's lovely because, you know, it's like being in a whirlwind and then spending some kind of downtime with everybody. And then it leaves a lovely kind of very wonderful vacuum, which is nice. But I think, I mean, real high points. Oh God, there's too many. There's way too many. But I mean, I think last year actually was there was something very special happened with and both nights were very good. But the last five acts, one of the nights were there's a woman from Paris called Carolina Ramirez, and we had Durovilia, who are this Swedish contortion team. And there was just something kind of happened. And this is what I love about live performance is sometimes it's like lighting a firework and you think you have one firework and then a whole firework display goes off. And you're like, you just sit there and as a producer, you're there going like, kind of usually in tears, kind of going, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. And it just takes off and it becomes something that by the end of it, you just feel, you'd think you'd feel exhausted, but you don't. You feel completely filled up. With this energy and this kind of magic, you know, whatever. So,
and I do understand this is just one of your many, many memories from the festival and your club as well. I mean, you have international guests.
I could
and
talk for hours about.
I see that.
But I won't.
The thing is that we have to stop. I mean,
but this is great.
I don't want to stop. But Jean-Paul Bichard, thank you so much for being here and sharing all your happiness and your experience and knowledge.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Och mina kära följare, vi hörs igen om 2 veckor. Tack för att ni har lyssnat.
På Chambers of Love kan du testa ut din korsettstorlek och välja antingen en av deras cirka 45 modeller eller skapa din helt egna custom-made korsett. Chambers of Love har något som passar alla, oavsett smak eller storlek. Utöver det har de Skandinaviens mest välsorterade BDSM-utbud över disk och även ett stort utbud av sexleksaker. Chambers of Love har väl utvalt sortiment och välutbildad personal. Titta gärna in på Drottninggatan 71D i Stockholm eller Trädgårdsgatan 3 i Norrköping och hitta just det du behöver. Jag har själv en korsett från deras sortiment och jag älskar den. Chambers of Love finns även dygnet runt på www.chambersoflove.se. Burleskpodden och vår samarbetspartner Passion of Sweden sponsrar i år Oktoberfest med fina priser ur Passion of Swedens unika sortiment av sexleksaker och underkläder till vinnarna i tävlingen Tassel Twirl. Tävlingen är en del av Stockholm Burlesque Festival 2017. Är du nyfiken på vilka priserna kan vara och är du sugen på att botanisera bland ett stort utbud av sexleksaker och underkläder går du in på passionofsweden.se.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.